This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bottom of hour number two. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. It's the best way to reach us here in studio. If you choose to reach us via text message, you can do so. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Amy Markscores. Amy is a St. Louis Blues reporter. She also does some pre- and post-work.
Play Gloria.
On KMOX Radio in St. Louis and the St. Louis Blues Radio Network. Amy, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. One game away, one win away. It can come as early as tomorrow evening for the Blues to win Lord Stanley's Cup for the first ever time. Before we look ahead to Game 6, everyone's talking about Game 5. Everyone's talking about the officiating gaffe in Game 5. How do the Blues sort of get over that? They obviously won the game, so they have to feel like they're playing with a little bit of house money in that sense. But given all the tenor of the Game 5 controversy, do you think that has a risk of maybe playing into the Blues' head ahead of Game 6?
You know, with any other team in any other year, I would have said yes. But this team has remained absolutely composed, whether it's a win, whether it's a loss, whether it's a missed call or a call that goes in their favor. And in the locker room, this team is so calm. And the way they're handling the noise surrounding the Tyler Bozak non-call is the exact same way they're handling the hand pass, with which lost them a game against the San Jose Sharks. By the time the media was in the locker room, guys seemed very calm and said, yeah, we're moving on. That game's over. You know, they looked at it as that game against the San Jose Sharks should never have gotten into overtime. They should have won in regulation. And the way they're looking at this game is refs missed some calls, and this time it worked in our favor, but they truly believe they outplayed the Bruins 5-on-5, and they were able to shut down the power play, and that game's over. Craig Berube has such a calmness about him, and that equanimity permeates the entire locker room. It's almost superhuman. It's quite the talk of the town.
Amy, we have to talk about Zach Sanford. He had a really nice assist on Ryan O'Reilly's first goal for the Blues. And obviously, we also want to get into, you know, Ivan Barbashev. He's not going to be in the lineup for Game 6, so I imagine it's going to be Robbie Fabry who comes in for the Blues. But can you just talk about how amazing of a story it is for Zach Sanford? Because this is a guy who was, you know, up in the press box for the majority of the playoffs.
Yeah, and his story actually reaches back to training camp. He lost his dad during training camp this year and flew back to go to the funeral, and then really battled for a roster spot all this year and was up in the press box for most of the playoffs, and he got his shot when Oscar Sundquist was suspended, and he made the most of that opportunity. He has 3 points in the playoffs so far, which people have pointed out is 3 more points than the perfection line has 5-on-5 in so far in this series. And so he has been a huge addition to this team. Of course, the Blues, as you mentioned, are going to lose Ivan Barbashev, and that's a tough loss because that fourth line has been so effective for the Blues. But going back to Sanford, Sanford represents one of the greatest assets that this team has, which I guess you could call it situational interchangeability. They have more players that can play in more situations than just about any roster out there. So when you talk about depth, it's not just offensive scoring depth, but it's their ability to move players in and out of the lineup. Look at Robert Bortuzzo and Joel Edmondson. That's like a glut of defensemen the Blues seem to have, and they're able to go in those situations and get the job done.
No, Amy, the Blues are the oldest active NHL team to have never won a Stanley Cup. But so what is the temperature like in St. Louis right now with this team just poised to win their first Stanley Cup in the history of this organization?
You know, winning grows a fan base. And we know this in St. Louis because the St. Louis Cardinals have a huge fan base from all of their success. But long-suffering concentrates that fan base. And I will say that if you can picture the Enterprise Center as a red-hot nucleus from which is emanating this fan base that has had 52 years of angst and suffering built up, pent up. The entire city is electric. They had 20,000 people in Enterprise Center for the watch party. For Game 4, they had a sold-out Enterprise Center, of course. They had 25,000 people outside watching. They had 10,000 people down the street at Ballpark Village. And in fact, the tickets for the game tomorrow are the most expensive Stanley Cup final ticket in history, and they're the second most expensive sporting event price in the past 10 years. Only the Cubs and Indians Game 7 went for more. This ticket is outpricing Super Bowls.
Those might be the only two teams that haven't won a title in longer than the Blues have, the Cubs and the Indians, actually won that one. Anyways, Amy Markscores is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. She covers the St. Louis Blues for KMOX Radio in St. Louis. You know, Amy, after Game 3, Craig Berube went to the podium and at the, you know, the coaches' press conference and basically called out the officiating. Since then, some would say that the officiating standard has changed. There's almost the, you know, part one of the series, the first three games, and then since then, part two, games 4 and 5. Do you believe that the officiating standard has changed and that Craig Berube's comments did make a difference, as Bruce Cassidy said after game 5?
Right. You know, I couldn't pretend to know. When Craig Berube made his comments after game 3, there was subtlety and tact to it. You know, he said, I don't agree with all of the calls, but if you look at that from the other side, I'm not sure that there is a coach who agrees with every single call or a fan who agrees with every single call. But he immediately followed that up with, the Blues need to be more disciplined. The Blues need to watch what they're doing after the play, after the whistle, and really put the onus on the players. Cassidy was much more direct in his comments, for sure, about his critique of the officiating. And I know everyone is human. There is the human element, but it wasn't like the Blues had more power plays. You know, the Boston Bruins still had 3 power plays to the Blues' 1. So I'm not sure that that had a difference or not, but if it was a little bit of posturing on Craig Berube's part, I'm okay. Gamesmanship. It will be interesting to see if Cassidy's comments have any effect.
No, Amy, I got to ask you about Vince Dunn, because I agree with you. There have been so many players on this Blues roster that have stepped up. I mean, we knew that Ryan O'Reilly and Vladimir Tarasenko, Jaden Schwartz, I mean, the Blues top players, we knew what to expect from them. But as you mentioned, when you're talking about Robert Bortuzzo and you're talking about some players on that fourth line, Zach Sanford, we talked about, but Vince Dunn, to me, I realized that, you know, Zdeno Chara playing with a broken jaw was a big deal, but people aren't talking about how Vince Dunn also took it a puck in the face. He was out for 3 weeks. He had concussion symptoms, and I read earlier this week that Vince Dunn still can't eat solid food. So how impressive has it been that, you know, Dunn has played so well? He's only played 2 games in the series, but obviously he had an immediate impact in game 4. But are enough people talking about how well Vince Dunn is playing, despite the fact that he also took a pretty bad puck to the face?
That's a great point, and I don't think so. I don't think Vince Dunn is getting the credit he deserved. As you mentioned, he's not able to eat solid foods yet. He told the media that his mouth constantly feels like he has it full of something. It's full of, whether it's wires or it feels like there's a cloth in his mouth. He feels like his mouth is full. He can't breathe regularly. He's still in pain. And the fact that he's going out there and contributing the way he is, and in fact, he took a couple of hits, and one in particular in game 5 that made me feel a little sick, because I can only imagine what that hit would feel like to your jaw if your jaw were fine, but to have it in as bad of shape as it is been stunned. So he has absolutely been a warrior, and he's such a valuable asset to this Blues team. I like to call him the Blues Torrey Krug. I know he's not as experienced. This is only his second year in the NHL, but a lot of the same elements that Torrey Krug brings to the Boston Bruins, that offensive threat, that defensive acumen, and that edge, that physicality, is what Vince Dunn brings to this team. So to have him back has been absolutely huge for the Blues.
You know, Amy, you talked about this team's mentality, and when they lost the game on a controversial call, that they still had the right mentality 10 minutes after the game. But now, knowing that this could be a Stanley Cup win and the cup is going to be in the building, are you noticing that this team is trying to maintain that even keel going into that game 6? Or can you sense that there's a little bit of anticipation, knowing how much importance there is going to be on this game?
Right. I know. I talked to Carl Gunnarsson, of all people, and this was before his big game-winning goal, which was his first playoff goal ever. And he said, if anybody tells you that they're not thinking about it, they're lying. They're thinking about it. It's on their minds. But it's how do you control that emotion? I think things got away from the Blues a little bit in Game 3, that first Stanley Cup final home game in 49 years. And so I'm actually headed to the rink in just a few minutes, and we'll kind of see the vibe of the locker room. I would be shocked if it's any different than what it has been. Craig Berube was asked, what do you think it will be like playing in Game 6? And he said, well, I think it's going to be a lot like Game 5. They just have work to do. And that's the way this team is viewing it. Immediately after that victory in Game 5, he told the team, all right, boys, good win. Now forget about it. You've got work to do. And that's the mentality that this team has had. So I'm sure deep down they're thinking about it. But so far they've been able to keep it in check. Tomorrow will be a huge test because the building's going to be absolutely electric.
You know, Amy, I mentioned it earlier, and you mentioned that you're heading to the rink shortly. Is the expectation, though, that Robbie Fabry is going to draw into that third line and then Sammy Blais is going to move down to the fourth line, or is it too early to know right now?
You know, it's a little too early to know. The rumors have been Robbie Fabry because he's been in that lineup. Jordan Nolan is also a possibility. My money would be on Fabry, though, and we'll have to see what the line rushes are. And kind of as I mentioned, there's so many guys who play so well in different situations and on different lines. That Zach Sanford and O'Reilly combination, the Blues had that back in October, November for a while, and it was incredibly productive for them. And then they've mixed things up again, so that line has been reunited. And yeah, we'll have to see for the right line rushes, but my money would be on Robbie Fabry.
Last question for you, Amy. If I'm not mistaken, there's nobody on the Blues roster who's won a Stanley Cup, and if I'm wrong, that certainly wouldn't be the first time. But you look at a guy like Jay Bouwmeester, who's won gold medal for Canada at the Olympics back in 2014. How much do you think that experience of playing for your country and playing in a gold medal game is maybe assisting the Blues, even though they haven't yet been in a position before? They have no one on their roster in a position before to say that they've won Lord Stanley's Cup.
Right. You know, I know that the Olympics is incredibly important to these players. I think it's just different. And as you mentioned, no one on this team has won a Stanley Cup final while playing in it. Oscar Sundquist actually has a ring from the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
Yep. But he didn't play in the final. And then you have David Perron, who played in the final last year with Vegas, mm-hmm. but didn't win. So aside from Perron, no one on this roster has ever even played in a Stanley Cup final. And I would even think that playing in the Stanley Cup final and then playing in the Stanley Cup final in St. Louis, where it's a franchise, as you mentioned, that has never won in their 52-year existence and hasn't even been to the final since 1970, is got to be different. It's a different set of emotions, a different set of pressures than you would have playing for like a Team Canada. Ryan O'Reilly pointed out that when you play on an international team, you're a group of guys who've been thrown together relatively last minute. But here, you've been with these guys all year. You've gone through so much pain, so much suffering. You've been in the cellar of the National Hockey League and gotten here. So it's a little bit different with your camaraderie with your teammates as well.
Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final goes tomorrow night in St. Louis. Amy Markscores will be in the building for KMOX Radio in St. Louis. Amy, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Our pleasure, Amy. We'll do it again real soon. When we come back, we discuss Jeff Skinner. He was going to be our UFA of the week. Well, he's no longer a UFA. He signed with the Buffalo Sabres late last night. We give our thoughts on that contract up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Until you have a contract signed, nothing's for sure. But what I've enjoyed about the negotiations is that there's no threats. There's no posturing. It's just trying to go through people's expectations and people's desires and trying to find a resolution to it.
The Buffalo Sabres have found a resolution to the Jeff Skinner contract dilemma. That was, of course, Sabres general manager Jason Botterill. The Sabres have signed Jeff Skinner to a massive contract extension 8 years, $72 million. The cap hit on Jeff Skinner is going to be $9 million per season through the end of the 2026-27 NHL season.
Nice little amount of shekels.
Yes, it's a few shekels there for Jeff Skinner. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You see Frank's Instagram earlier this week? He was posting on Instagram all of the different pizzas.
He was tweeting them as well. They're on Twitter too. Every time the Raptors plays, Frank seems to be whipping up a feast in the kitchen.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't require a sports team to be playing for Frank to be doing something in the kitchen.
Well, whatever he does, good work in the kitchen is basically what it boils down to.
I've been bugging Frank for the last like 2 or 3 years that I just want to like basically live with him so I could eat all of this great pasta and pizza.
That's because you're homeless.
I can't see why that wouldn't be enticing to Frank. I just don't understand why he hasn't taken you up on that offer.
Like, Frank, what's for breakfast today?
Yeah, I can't even imagine why he still answers your text messages.
It's
never mind.
Hold on, you want a large pizza for breakfast? You just had pizza for dinner last night and pizza for dessert. Speaking of that, I could eat pizza 5 days a week.
Yeah, so could I.
That's good. This is a real, real insightful conversation.
Naomi gives me a hard time because at any time she wants to order food, I'm like, let's order pizza.
And no surprise.
Or go to Frank's house.
And no surprise. Yeah, as he's wearing a shirt that says sauce.
It's true. That's sauce hockey, not pizza sauce.
My boys at Sauce Hockey.
Yeah, oh, exactly. I assumed it was pizza sauce.
I understand why you would think that,
Dave. You get in one, Dave.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Let's talk about Jeff Skinner's contract. 8 years, $72 million, $9 million a season. You sort of expected that they were going to re-sign Jeff Skinner. There's been so much talk that they were working and they were working and they were close and they were close. And then they finally came out last night, but $9 million a year for Jeff Skinner. And he had a great season, a career high 40 goals this past year. And we know goal scorers get paid.
Right. But well, boy, at one point, he was on pace for 50.
Yeah. He had a great first half of the season like the Sabres did, and then they sort of fell off in the second half.
Yep.
To me, this is a lot of money for Jeff Skinner, for a guy who's had concussion issues, a guy who's really never played in the Stanley Cup playoffs, given that he spent so many years of his career with the Carolina Hurricanes before moving to Buffalo. I don't love this contract myself.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like it in the sense that I've always been a fan of Jeff Skinner, and it's funny because, you know, Jeff Skinner was taken 7th overall in 2010, and I remember everyone was talking about who the Jets could get with their first pick in 2011, obviously, was Scheifele, right? So Scheifele and Skinner are always compared. But when you're talking about Skinner, I mean, you talk about, you know, the 40 goals, okay? Mm-hmm. What Jason Botterill had to sign Jeff Skinner. And for me, the bigger problem is that the Sabres now have, what is it, $19 million or $20 million tied up between Jack Eichel and Jeff Skinner. And I wanted to bring this up because I made sure that I screenshotted this. This was from Mike Harrington's Buffalo News column. He mentions that over the last four seasons, so for those people saying that, you know, Jeff Skinner, that was his career year, he hasn't been a productive player. Well, no, that's not the case. He's actually scored 30 goals four times before, and he scored 30 goals in his rookie year. So when you're talking about the last four seasons, Drew, Jeff Skinner is tied for third in the NHL. Only two other players have more even strength goals. Kane is number one with 113. Ovechkin is number two with 112. And then Tarasenko and Tavares are tied with Skinner at 106. So he's got more goals over the last 4 years than Connor McDavid, Nikita Kucherov, Sidney Crosby, Brad Marchand. So for all these people that are saying, you know, well, Jeff Skinner, he had one good year. I mean, no, he's actually one of the best goal scorers in the league. But yes, it's too much money. I mean, I was telling you guys off air. I mean, I think if Jeff Skinner signs for $7 million a year, or even, let's say, you know, $7.5 million a year, that's fine. He deserves it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a perennial. He's a 30 to 40 goal guy. I don't think that Skinner's going to score a couple of 50 goal seasons, guys. I mean, he's a consistent 30 to 40 goal guy, and he's going to be somewhere around, you know, 55 to 65 points. He's not a 90 point guy.
No.
He's a 60 to 65 point guy. And yes, you know, I mean, the Buffalo Sabres are coming off of a very disappointing year. When you trade Ryan O'Reilly away, and then you basically, you know, use that space to bring in a guy like Jeff Skinner, and then he puts up a 40 goal year, almost a 50 goal year based on what he was on pace for. I mean, you have to sign him, don't you, Dave? If you're Jason Botterill, what message does that send to your team and your fan base if you don't sign him?
No, I think you're right. I think you know from Buffalo's perspective, I mean, this is a team similar to Carolina, where people have been expecting them after being kind of in the basement of the Eastern Conference to kind of take that next step and be able to do something. You've got a player who in Jack Eichel who is seen as a difference maker, but you needed to start pairing him with other players, you know, and that's the key is having guys who can be complementary players to these superstars. And that's, you know, otherwise you're going to have these, you know, he'll be a malcontent. He won't be happy. You actually saw it from Jack Eichel many times. He's a guy who speaks his mind. Mm-hmm. And you could clearly see his frustration for the last few seasons at what's been going on. So I agree with you. I mean, look, Jeff Skinner's a guy from Toronto. So from his perspective, Buffalo is close. It's a pretty good opportunity for him to stay close to friends and family in Toronto. And obviously he became familiar with the situation, liked what he saw. And yeah, do I think it's an overpay? For sure. I think it's a little
bit.
But
you have to over, this is the thing. How many free agents, top free agents is Buffalo attracting? I mean, not many, right? So my point is like, I agree with you, Drew. It's too much money. I mean, but we know that a lot of players get paid too much money. I mean, look at Milan Lucic. Yeah. He got too much money. But when you're talking about Jeff Skinner, if you don't bring him back, who are you bringing in on the free agent market to be a 35 to 45 goal scorer? I just don't think that Jason Botterill had any options. And I realize that Botterill has been criticized for the Ryan O'Reilly trade, but I think that's easy to criticize him because St. Louis went to the Stanley Cup final. So everybody's saying, oh, that was a horrible trade. I agree. St. Louis won the trade, but I think Botterill was in a position first year GM. He had to make some moves. I mean, the O'Reilly trade wasn't a good one. Trading for Jeff Skinner was a good one.
It was a good one, but it goes to show you the sort of the risk involved with trading for a guy who's got 1 year left on his deal when you want to sign him. And, you know, to Skinner's credit, he did get 40 goals, so that certainly boosted up his value. But, you know, when you trade a guy who's got 1 year left on his deal, there's almost extra incentive to then re-sign that guy, and you might have to pay a premium,
right,
which is what the Sabres probably did. That being said, if Skinner goes to unrestricted free agency, if he hits the open market,
he probably gets a similar amount of money.
Maybe 8.5.
Yeah, like, so what are we talking about here? I mean, you can give him an extra $500,000. And
just,
I realize
you just have to hope that, I mean, you just have to hope that one, he stays healthy, and B, you sort of have to acknowledge that every NHL player, you know, if you score goals, you're going to get overpaid, even if you're not going to be a point a game guy, and Jeff Skinner's never going to be a point a game player.
And speaking of that, he missed some time earlier in his career, but yeah, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, he hasn't missed a lot of hockey, so he's a very dependable, durable player. So again, you might have overpaid a little bit, but when you're talking about, you know, Skinner, Buffalo has had so much bad news. I mean, the Sabres they haven't made the playoffs.
Jason Botterill did not have a lot of leverage.
When was the last time they made the playoffs? 7 years ago? Something 8 years like ago? That. I mean, it's been a long time. So yeah. Skinner was a bright spot in a otherwise down year.
Skinner and his representatives had leverage, and they used it well against the Sabres, and now the Sabres hope that he is able to repeat what he did this past year and maybe lead the Sabres, like you said, back to a playoff contender.
Skinner?
When we come back, Abby Mastracco covers the New Jersey Devils. The Devils, of course, have the first overall pick at the upcoming draft. We talked to them about that. And Taylor Hall, what's his future long-term in New Jersey? Abby Mastracco of the Record newspaper in New Jersey is up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. If you prefer to do so via text message, you can do so. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Record newspaper in New Jersey, Abby Mastracco joins us on the program now. She covers the New Jersey Devils. Abby, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
That's good. We are a little less than 2 weeks away from the first round of the NHL draft. In fact, 2 weeks yesterday, the New Jersey Devils, of course, sit in the driver's seat with that first overall pick. And it's generally come down to a Jack Hughes versus Kaapo Kakko conversation as to who's going to be the first overall pick. Most people think it's going to be Hughes. You know, how much does Ray Shiro and his familiarity with Jack Hughes' family sort of maybe factor in as a tipping point if things were even between Hughes and Kakko?
I think that's a big factor. You know, Ray was his dad's agent way back when, a long time ago, and You know, he knows the kind of character he's going to get in Jack Hughes, and he knows, you know, the work ethic, and just knowing somebody's background like that, the level of familiarity may make a difference. But I think ultimately what makes the difference is the positions. The Devils are not very deep up the middle, and, you know, Kako's a tremendous talent, obviously, but I think Jack being a center is really what sets him over the edge.
Yeah, and Abby, I think we all agree that, you know, and not that our opinion really matters, but I think most people expect Jack Hughes to be taken by the Devils for that exact reason. Not only is he arguably the best player in the draft, most people believe that he is the best player in the draft, but because you can have Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes up the middle. But with the way Kaapo Kakko played at the World Hockey Championship, and I realize that Ray Shiro and Paul Kastrin, Devils head of amateur scouting, everybody is saying the right things, but Is it making it just that much more difficult, whereas maybe, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, the Devils knew that, okay, Jack Hughes is our guy?
Oh, yeah. I think the way that he played absolutely makes the decision tougher, because he looked like a man out there, and he's been playing with men. That's what everybody's been saying for years. Look, he can play with men. He's more physically developed. He's probably more ready to make an impact right away. So maybe he'll be an impact player tomorrow, and Jack Hughes will be an impact player on Wednesday, but the ceiling might be higher for Jack Hughes, and I think ultimately that's what the Devils are looking for, is a kid that they can, not that you can't grow with Kaapo, but you can, you know, having a dynamic center like that to put with Nico, that 1-2 punch up the middle, then you can move Travis Zajac down. He was playing so many minutes last year, it was really tough for him. You can move him down, put him in a better position. You can move Zaka down or move him out on the wing. I just think the possibility with Hughes is, the possibilities are a little more attractive than with a winger like Kakko. And look, he's a really dynamic winger. And like I said, he may be an impact player tomorrow. So there's a lot of possibilities with him too. I keep going back to the fact that Jack's such a dynamic center and really what they need right now.
Oh, Abby, Taylor Hall and the Devils, they have the big contracts talks potentially this summer as he enters his final season of his current contract. And, you know, earlier this week he talked about, you know, not being in a rush to sign an extension. And, of course, it's summer, hearkening back to John Tavares and what he said with the Islanders. Are folks in New Jersey concerned that this isn't going to get done, or are they thinking that this is just a wait-and-see approach and eventually it'll get signed?
Oh, look, this is a New York media market. These fans panic over everything. Let's be honest here. they've been scared that Taylor wasn't going to sign since last year. You say one thing on Twitter, even out loud, you even just say the word Taylor Hall. You say Taylor Ham instead of pork roll, and they get upset. They get panicked that Taylor's going to go somewhere else. But Taylor said at the end of the season that they lack talent in a lot of positions. So this wait-and-see approach, I think he wants to see what's done at the draft, what's done in free agency. Ray's got 10 draft picks, 3 in the second round. Those are pretty valuable. I think this wait-and-see approach is so that Taylor can see, okay, are they doing the right things to bring in more talent? Because last year they didn't bring in more talent in the offseason. They signed some, you know, two-way guys here and there, but they didn't have any big impact offseason moves that made the team better. They were relying on guys in the minor leagues to finally develop and take the next step this year, and they didn't. So, okay, those guys are not the guys you're going to rely on this year. Now you need to go outside the organization, bring in more talent. Taylor's absolutely right when he said they lack talent, and for a franchise player like that to want to know that the team is making the right moves, he's got every right to do that.
Abby Mastracco is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Abby is with the Record newspaper in New Jersey. She covers the New Jersey Devils. Abby, here in Winnipeg, all the talk, or a lot of the talk, has to do with Jacob Trouba. He's 1 year away from unrestricted free agency, and a lot of people here expect him to be dealt sometime between now and, say, the NHL draft in Vancouver. One of those teams that people are connecting the dots with happens to be the New Jersey Devils. From your perspective in New Jersey, do you think that there's a match between the Jets and the Jets organization and the Devils, and do you think the Devils would be interested in a guy like Jacob Trouba? And the name most often heard coming back to Winnipeg, and take this for what it's worth, of course, is Damon Severson of Brandon, Manitoba.
I think it could possibly be a match. I don't know that they really want to deal Damon Severson right now, because he's one of the guys who has, look, their player development system has been totally revamped, but there hasn't been a lot of players who came out of it last season. Damon Severson, though, was one of them. I think they really like the step that he took last season. They see him as a top pairing defenseman. He played very well in the World Championships, and he's a local kid for you guys there. He's from the area, but I think he's somebody that the Devils, I can't see them moving him right now. Looking at the contract and everything, possibly I could see the name being floated out there, but I just get the feeling that he's a guy that the Devils are really trying to sort of build their blue line around, and they've got some additions this year, like Ty Smith, who they're hoping will make a team out of camp. But I think a young defenseman like Damon is one that you brought up through your system. I can't see them moving him right now.
Abby, last year the Devils ended the season. Their top two goalies were, of course, Mackenzie Blackwood and Corey Schneider after Keith Kincaid was traded to the Columbus Blue Jackets. I believe it was a fifth-round pick in 2022. Looking forward, how do you see the Devils using their goaltenders? Is it going to be Mackenzie Blackwood and Corey Schneider splitting the starts? Obviously, you know, Blackwood was surprisingly good, and Corey Schneider struggled, but obviously, you know, injuries had a factor in that. Or you expect Ray Shiro to maybe bring in a veteran goaltender via free agency?
I think they would like to maybe bring in a veteran to play at the AHL level just as some insurance, but I think that it's going to be you're going to have goalie one and then goalie 1A, and I think maybe Mackenzie has the edge right now, but we'll see during training camp. I think Corey ended the season on a good note. His performance in the World Championship was good at times, not so good at times. You know, he's a veteran with some hip injuries. Those are pretty major in goaltending. There's been some goalies who have come back from those hip injuries. There's been some goalies who haven't come back from them. I think Corey still wants to prove he's still got a lot in the tank. He felt great at the end of the season. But Mackenzie was really fun to watch. He's so athletic. I think he struggled a little bit down the stretch, the last few games of the season. Maybe not used to playing that many games, but he's got that figured out. That sort of comes along with age, experience. I would want to say that Mackenzie has the edge right now. I mean, really, today's NHL, you almost need two goaltenders sometimes. So I think the split would work out. It's pretty favorable for either one. But I want to say that Mackenzie has the edge. You've got to wait until training camp for that for sure, though.
You know, Abby, this is an organization that's had a lot of success, 3 Stanley Cup final wins. They've got 5 appearances in total. But in the last 7 years, you've had just 1 playoff appearance. How much patience is left from the fan base for this organization to continue kind of middling along and not even making the playoffs, let alone challenging?
Oh, the fan base was pretty upset, let me tell you. my inbox last year was pretty full. Some people who think that this is, not acceptable because of the history of this organization, and they were upset with Ray. You know, fans are still mad at Ray for not doing a ton last summer. They have not let that go. It's been a year. They've got to let it go now. They've got to see what he does this year. In terms of ownership, I think they've got some patience, but maybe after that one playoff appearance last year, they've kind of seen what could be, and it's time to sort of kick this into gear. I don't think rebuilds take a long time, especially the way that the Devils want to do it. They don't want to go after these big money free. They don't want to overpay for free agents. They don't want to get themselves into cap trouble. They want to create a system where they're bringing up their players. They want to create success based on their own internal players. They want to make it sustainable. They want to be successful year after year without having to shed a ton of contracts and turn over the roster every year. And I get that, and that takes time. I think the fans are definitely impatient, and if they don't make the playoffs within the night, making the playoffs, I don't think is going to be good enough this year. They've got the first pick. They've got an impact player like Huberto Kako coming in. You've got to make a run this year, and if you don't, then something's wrong and you need to reevaluate who you've got in position leading the charge here.
Abby, last question for you here, and you mentioned the playoffs, and, you know, Marcus Johansson, obviously, you know, he was the, a center of attention, Ivan Barbashev with the hit to the head, and Barbashev is going to be suspended for game six tomorrow night. But as you know, Johansson has been really good for the Bruins, and I'm not rubbing it in. I'm actually a Devils fan, but, you know, four goals and 11 points. But are Devils, does that just irk Devils fans even more, or are they not as mad because Ray Shiro was able to get a second rounder, and then I believe he got a fourth rounder with that, but the Devils are going to have that extra pick. As you mentioned, the Devils have 10 picks at the upcoming draft. So does that kind of ease the pain a little bit for Devils fans?
I think so. I know that some Devils fans are still hoping that they can get Marcus back in free agency and Brian Boyle too. And my argument to that is, yeah, but then, you had those guys last year and the team didn't do it a whole lot. So what's the point in bringing the same guys in? But I make the same argument with the Mets every season anyway, too. I think a lot of fans are actually happy for Marcus given what happened to him last year with Brad Marchand taking him out and the concussion problems. And he had some concussion problems again this season and battled some injuries again this season. And he's such a good guy and such a smart player. So I think the second round pick is definitely, it helps ease the pain. I think overall, though, fans are pretty happy for Marcus Johansson and the success he's having in Boston right now. He's a good guy. You root for those guys.
Abby Mastracco covers the New Jersey Devils for the Record newspaper in Jersey. Abby, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Abby. We'll do it again soon. When we come back, we look at some bad contracts throughout the NHL and play buy it out or maintain status quo. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
When I first heard the Lucic for Erickson trade rumors or talk or whatever, I initially thought it was more just, that's kind of creative thing, fans and media thinking about how the Canucks could get rid of their problem and the Oilers could get rid of their problem and maybe everybody would start fresh.
That's TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie talking about the rumored deal between the Edmonton Oilers and the Vancouver Canucks that would see Louis Erickson traded for Milan Lucic.
If that trade ever happened, that would be the worst trade in the history because both teams would lose.
Well, I mean, both teams are already losing by having those players on the roster, which it's a classic, maybe we'll switch things up, trade these two players who clearly aren't worth the contracts that they have and see if it, changes their fortunes.
I'll still maintain this. If Milan Lucic was making $3.5 million a year, I mean, it wouldn't look that bad. It's because he makes $6 million a year.
I mean, even
I kind of feel bad. I realize that, these guys sign the contracts. Why do we feel bad for them? It's just because it feels like we've been talking about this for 2 years.
Well, it's been a bad contract for 2 years, and it's still going to be a bad contract for another 4 years.
But the Oilers, what I'm saying is the Oilers gave him that money. Yeah. Like, what is Lucic supposed to do? Say, oh, no, actually, don't pay me that much money.
Nobody faults Lucic. The fault lies on the shoulders of deposed Oilers general manager, Peter Chiarelli.
Like when Roberto Luongo was like, I hate my contract.
Yeah. He's not saying he actually hates his contract.
Like, he's like not saying, well, you know what? Take back the millions of dollars you're paying me.
The number of people who literally took that to mean that is mind-boggling. I mean, he clearly wasn't saying, he's making millions upon millions of dollars. Yeah. He's not complaining about his contract. He's complaining about the ability to use his contract in a trade, which, long story short, they were able to end up doing when they really wanted to in Vancouver, where he ended up in Florida.
The biggest issue with the Milan Lucic contract is he was given that contract 2 or 3 years too late.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how old is Lucic now? 30, 31?
He is
something like that. I mean,
31.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you would have given him that contract when he was 25 years old.
Yeah, well, of course.
Then it's fine. But like,
it was a bad contract signed by a bad general manager. Yep. Sometimes it's as easy as that.
And I'm telling you right now, like, similarly, if you're going to, you're talking about this with Tyler Myers at 29, when he's going to get a contract, I guarantee you in a few years, there's going to be a team who's going to be doing the same exercise saying, is Tyler Myers worth $6 million plus that we're paying him, Vancouver Canucks? Then it's the truth. I mean, that's the problem with these guys. They go out, they quote earn it, but we're seeing with the NHL as it goes younger and younger, you can afford to allow these guys to leave because they can be replaced by guys. So you can still manage to have a team that allows you to have, the Patrick Laines, the Kyle Connors, and not have to sacrifice that for older players.
Well, Dave, at least they nailed the Mikko Koskinen contract.
That was the best contract of the last number of years in Edmonton. That one is when your general manager gets fired 48 hours after you sign that contract.
I think it was like 24 hours.
Maybe it was 24 hours.
Less than 48 hours.
That's my, of all the litany of bad moves the Oilers have made over the last decade, that one might be my favorite for just how inexplicable the entire thing was.
And that's factoring in Taylor Hall for Adam Larson and Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strome. I mean,
it's that inexplicable. Let's go through a number of players who have bad contracts and see whether the team would be better off keeping them status quo or if they'd be better off buying them out. We start in Anaheim.
We should be calling it fire them into the sun.
You could do that too. It's a little aggressive if you ask me, Dave, but
I don't know. Do we have a soundtrack for this segment? Like, I feel like Shawnee should have like a little music bed going here. We need some sound effects.
Well, I'm sure he appreciates us telling him that now.
Yeah, in the middle of the segment. We could have given him a heads up. You know, that would have been the proper thing.
Shawnee's not even in the studio.
He left an hour ago. Corey Perry of the Anaheim Ducks. He's got 2 years left, a salary cap hit of $8.6 million per season.
Yikes.
It's going to be hard to buy that one out because of the injury factor, but let's assume that he's not injured. Should the Ducks keep that contract or buy that contract out, Ezra Ginsberg?
It's just too much money. I mean, to buy that contract out, right? Two-thirds of that, I mean, you could do the math.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think they will. I wouldn't buy it out. I mean, I think the Ducks are in trouble. I mean, you look at Ryan Kesler. He's not going to play next year. Right? People forget that. I mean, yeah. Ryan Kesler is going to be out the entire year.
You put him on LTIR and insurance pays Kessler's contract.
No, I get that. But I'm just saying, like, that's your second line center.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, like, the Ducks have a lot of good prospects, right? Like, we've talked about it. Sam Steele is a good young player. And who am I thinking of here? Maxime Comtois is a good player.
Terry.
Yeah, Troy Terry is another guy, Drew. Yeah. But I don't know how good they're going to be next year. Like, I think they're a fringe playoff team next year. But when you're talking about Corey Perry, I probably wouldn't buy him out because there's only 2 years left. And you do need some veteran players to kind of guide the younger players. Getzlaff and Perry and Adam Henrique are those veteran guys. So I probably would say no to that one.
Dave, Scott Darling has 2 years left at a $4.15 million cap hit. We know that he's certainly going through some ups and downs. He's never turned into to be the number one goaltender that the Hurricanes envisioned him as. And he left the team for a personal leave of absence to, quote unquote, get his mind back together. What do you think the Hurricanes do with that contract at $4.15 per season?
Yeah, I mean, the actual cost if you buy him out is $1.18 million for 4 years, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then, so I mean, it's not a huge number that you're talking about from the Hurricanes' perspective. And of course, you got to remember that their AHL affiliate right now is got a commanding lead on the Chicago Wolves in the Calder Cup final. So they've got lots of young talent. They've got lots of goaltending talent. So I could see them doing it, but I mean, again, it's not a huge amount. You're not talking about a real impact especially because you have other players who are going to be able to come in who are relatively cheap and could offset any costs you're putting out for Darling.
Justin Abdelkader in Detroit has 4 years left on his contract. His cap hit is $4.25 million per season, so he's got $14.25 million in salary remaining on that four-year deal. What should the Red Wings do with that contract? Status quo or buy him out, Ezzy?
Well, I mean, I don't know if status quo includes trading him, but for me, moving Abdelkader,
who's taking that contract,
though? makes more sense. Well,
I think when we go through this exercise, most of these contracts are relatively untradeable unless you're taking a very bad contract back, you know, in exchange.
But right. I thought the answer would just be the Arizona Coyotes. Isn't that just always the default answer?
Right.
Who is taking a bad contract? You know, the Arizona Coyotes.
Right, and you have to factor that in. So I would probably say no again to Abdelkader. I don't know if Steve Yzerman is considering it or will consider it. But when you're talking about Abdelkader, again, a young team, you know, this is a guy that's been with the Red Wings his entire career. Mm-hmm. Very versatile player, right?
Played for Michigan State.
Right. I've always liked his game, physical edge. I mean, you know, he's never been a 30 goal scorer. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, is more in the kind of 10 to 15 goal range. But I would keep Abdelkader again because, you know, when you look at the young players that the Red Wings have coming up, and obviously, you know, Anthony Mantha, Dylan Larkin, those are, you know, they're two top players right now, and they have other guys coming to the lineup, Michael Rasmussen, Philip Zadina. You know, they have a lot of good young prospects, but I still think they can use Abdelkader. But if it was between buying him out and trading him, I agree, Drew, that contract might be tough to trade, but because he doesn't, it's not like he makes $7 million a year.
I
still think that, you know, he can have a role on this team. So I'd say no to a buyout.
Last one, Carl Alzner of the Montreal Canadiens, 3 years, a cap hit of $4.6 million per season.
Yes.
He played in the, he at played the, in the American Hockey League.
Yeah, I mean, that one is an obvious one to me. I mean, you buy Alzner out. I mean, he's not going to play in the NHL again, probably.
You think his career is done at the NHL level?
He didn't play last year.
Fair enough.
Or did he play at all? No, he played a little bit, maybe a few games. But, I mean, Alzner was a good defense.
He had 9 games last year at the NHL level.
I mean, but he didn't play towards the end of the season, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about Alzner, I mean, good NHL career, you know, good junior player, was really good for the Capitals. But, the game is just, he's too slow right now for the game. And it looks like if he's going to continue his career, it'll be overseas or in the American League. So for me, that one makes sense for them to buy him out.
When we come back, Guy Flaming is going to join us. Guy is an expert on all things Western Hockey League. We'll talk about the WHL's draft eligible prospects up next with Guy Flaming. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number 3, Saturday morning. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The first round of the NHL draft is 13 days away. It'll be held in Vancouver, British Columbia. We're pleased to be joined by Guy Flaming of the Pipeline Show to talk about the Western Hockey League draft eligible prospects. Guy, good morning. Nice to hear from you again.
Boys, nice to be back with you. Thanks for the invite.
Our pleasure, Guy. Let's start with Saskatoon Blade center Kirby Dock. He's expected to be a top 10 pick at the upcoming NHL draft, but some scouts are divided on what his ceiling will actually be at the NHL level. You've seen him a lot in the course of your duties with the Edmonton Oil Kings as a broadcaster of the Oil Kings. What is your opinion of Kirby Dock?
I like him. The list of things not to like about Kirby Dock is extremely short. I mean, he's got the size, he skates well, sees the ice very well. I love that he's got the long reach and knows how to use it, whether it's protecting the puck or attacking. And I think he's a really good player. I think the knock on him is, while early on in his WHL career wasn't sure if he'd be able to score as much as you'd like. But he had 25 goals this year. So I think the offense is coming around for him, but he's more of a setup guy than a shoot-first player. But the offense is definitely there. I think there's a lot of upside for him. And maybe you might have to give him the whip a little bit every once in a while just to get him going. But that's okay, too. And I think that natural ability will come through for him. He's a good player.
Guy, the next player we want to ask you about is Dylan Cousins from the Lethbridge Hurricanes, another guy that you've watched play many times over the years. I mean, back at the beginning of the year, back of the hockey year, September 2018, TSN's director of scouting, Craig Button, as you know, had him high on his list. I believe the highest he was number 2 behind Jack Hughes. Now he's at number 14. Obviously, doesn't mean that Craig Button thinks he's going to be drafted at number 14, but Button said earlier this week on TSN that he sees Dylan Cousins more as a winger at the NHL level than as a center at the NHL level. Do you agree with him?
It's interesting because I thought for me that's one of the advantages of Dylan Cousins is that he has that versatility. Yes, he's played center with the Hurricanes, but I agree with Craig, and why wouldn't he? He knows what he's talking about, but I could see him more as a winger at the next level. I don't think that's necessarily a negative. When it comes to the pecking order of the draft, the centers do usually go before the wingers, and maybe that's why Craig has bumped them down a little bit. But I don't take that as a negative at all. I think that versatility is a good thing. Dylan Cousins is a scorer, and he's got the size as well. I think the hardest thing to do in the NHL is score goals, and this is a guy who can do that. So to me, I like Dylan Cousins a lot, and I would have Cousins and Doc very, very close together.
You know, Gabe, Braden Tracy of the Moose Jaw Warriors had 36 goals and 81 points this past season and was named WHL Rookie of the Year. He's also impressed at the World Under-18s, putting up 7 points in 7 games. What have you liked when you've seen Tracy play?
Well, I like that he played with some really good line mates in Moose Jaw this year. It was basically a very good one-line team, and he was on that one line. But you need to be a talented player to be able to play with other talented players. So we've already seen that from him at a young age. And, you know, he was also an older guy this year in the WHL as a rookie. So that worked to his advantage. But skates really well. He's got size and obviously can put the puck in the net. You mentioned the goals this year. So he's a good player. And I'm really intrigued to see what he does next year without a couple of his former line mates that, you know, you can always make the argument that somebody's riding on somebody else's coattails. I don't know that that's the fact here with Tracy, but I suspect next year he's still going to put up big numbers for Moose Jaw. He's going to become basically their go-to guy. I expect good things from him. He's a good player, too, and although I would think maybe later first round or second round for him.
Guy Flaming is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Guy is with the Pipeline Show, and we're discussing WHL draft-eligible talent. Guy, this just came out earlier today. It appears as though Winnipeg Ice forward Peyton Krebs has had his Achilles tendon partially severed. He's undergone surgery. This is a guy, of course, who's draft-eligible coming up in just 2 weeks' time. Do you think that this injury will cause his draft stock to fall in any significant fashion?
No, I don't. It's not a career-ending injury or anything like that. And it's just unfortunate timing for him. But no, I think even the initial reports that I read were that he should be fine to start close to the start of the season. So no, I don't think it's going to impact his draft stock at all. And a really good player. I mean, very, very versatile. And you know, playing for the Kootenay Ice now in your backyard with the Winnipeg, that's going to be a marquee player. A lot of fans there are going to really enjoy watching him play. Having seen him come through Edmonton, that was not a very good team. In the last 2 or 3 years, that's not been a very good team. You really saw what he could do when he would play, you know, with Canada at the Hlinka-Gretzky Cup here in Edmonton last summer, or with Canada at the U18s over in Sweden, or at the CHL Top Prospect Game. You put him with other players, and man, he really elevates his game. He's a talented player, and you know, he reminded me a lot of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I threw that name at him when I had him on the show, and he didn't shy away from that at all. But he also mentioned Braden Point of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and that's a pretty good comparison, too.
Yeah, we have some other players that we want to ask you about, but I want to ask you about a goalie, Mads Søgaard, a Danish goalie of the Medicine Hat Tigers. He's the top-ranked WHL goalie for the upcoming draft, and he's set to become only the second Danish-born goaltender to be drafted into the NHL. Of course, as you know, Freddie Anderson is the other one with the Toronto Maple Leafs, drafted by the Anaheim Ducks. Obviously, Sogard's got great size, 6'7", and that's, as you know, why he's getting compared to a guy like Ben Bishop. But many scouts think he can be a number one goalie, and although we're not expecting Søgaard to be the top goalie taken, we're expecting that to be, I'm losing his name here, Spencer Knight. Spencer Knight with the U.S. National Team Development Program. Watching him play against the Edmonton Oil Kings, I know it's tough to predict goalies, but do you see that kind of future number one goaltender potential when you watch Mads Søgaard?
Well, based on the way he played in the playoffs for Medicine Hat, I would say yes. And, you know, he didn't have a very good World Junior Championship, and I know he was really disappointed by that. And maybe that was a motivator for him in the second half of the year, because he was very good in Medicine Hat. In that series against the Oil Kings, it was the opening round of the WHL playoffs. That series would have been over in 3 games if not for Mads Søgaard. He was fantastic for Medicine Hat. There were games where Edmonton was all over the Tigers. They just couldn't put the puck behind him. He's so big. I mean, there's photos of him playing in the game where he looks like he's standing 2 feet taller than everybody else on the ice. It's crazy. And he's very agile. I think sometimes when you have a big goaltender, you might think they take up a lot of space in the net, but they're a bit clunky in their movements. I didn't see that with Mads Søgaard. I really liked him, and especially in the playoffs, and he sold me on what he can do. I think there's a really good goaltender in there.
Nothing makes you feel older than when you're talking about prospects, sons of former NHLers, and Nolan Foote, of course, the son of Adam Foote. You know, he's now was looked at as a top 10 prospect for the 2019 draft, but he's now more likely to be selected in the first round or somewhere early in the second round. Regardless of where he ends up going, is a lack of speed the biggest knock on Foote?
That's what I've heard as well. So Now the Rockets didn't come to Edmonton this year, so I didn't get to see him firsthand. But you know, watching some games online and things doesn't always tell you the big picture. But it almost sounded like there may have been some injury in there as well for him this year. So might not have been 100% all season. Really smart player though, and I think the hockey gene that does. There's a lot of people who say that just because he's the son of a former player, he kind of grew up in that atmosphere with that mentality. I think that does go a long way, and he's a smart player. His older brother Cal Foote, smart player as well. So Nolan Foote, although he might not be a burner, if there's one trait that I think a hockey player can improve on the most, it's foot speed. If you can't handle the puck or you don't have the natural hockey sense, those things are hard to learn. But I think you can improve your skating stride the most. So I wouldn't hesitate to draft Nolan Foote if you don't think he's a great skater right now.
Now, Guy, we mentioned earlier you're an analyst for the Edmonton Oil Kings, so we got to ask you about D-man Matthew Robertson. He's expected to go, you know, somewhere late in the first round, early second round, and the scouting reports that I read, you know, rave about his skating and his two-way game. But having watched him play many times live, we wanted to ask you for your scouting report of Matthew Robertson.
Yeah, he's very calm and composed, especially in his own end. He does a lot of really subtle movements. I mean, a player will be rushing it on him, and he might put the puck through his feet or something. He'll make simple plays that don't look very simple at all, and I think he would drive coaches crazy, except you realize it's Brett Robertson, or Matthew Robertson, rather, and he's able to pull off these moves. He'll take the puck up through the middle of the slot and from around his net, and those are plays most guys don't make because it's a dangerous play, but he's able to execute them. So Robertson, he's not afraid to jump up into the play. I wouldn't say he's going to be like a number one power play guy. He doesn't have a huge shot from the point or anything like that, but he's more of a puck transporter and distributor than the pure offensive guy. He didn't have huge offensive numbers this year, but that might evolve for him over time. But it's his calm and his composure with the puck, especially in the zone end, that I think stands out for me.
Last question for you, Guy. Here in Winnipeg, the Jets do not have a first-round pick. They, of course, traded that to the New York Rangers for Kevin Hayes back at the trade deadline. Given that the Jets don't pick until the second round, who are some players from the WHL that you might be keeping an eye on that you think could be good value sort of later on in the draft, second round or later?
Oh, that's a good question. I think there are a few guys. Alexi Protas is an interesting player, played for the Prince Albert Raiders this year. Brett Leeson, a teammate of his. Both of those guys could be there in the second round. I think Protas will be for sure, and maybe even in the third round. But both of them, big players, big offensive guys as well. So there's a couple maybe to keep tabs on. I think the WHL this year was really, really strong, but it might be, do you think the Jets might be in line looking for a goaltender? Because I do think it's a good year for goalies out of the WHL, but you'd have to tell me the Jets' depth chart in net might be fairly strong. I'm not sure.
I would think it, you know, where the Jets are selecting, they're probably more, late in the second round right now. They'd probably be more best player available regardless of what position they would be.
All right, well, I'll give you another forward. His name is Dylan Hamilak. Just had him on the show earlier this week. Played for the Seattle Thunderbirds this year, but didn't play in 2019 at all. He was hurt right before New Year's. 6'3", power forward, says he loves to play physical. Had 26 points in those 31 games. He's just been traded about a month ago to the Kelowna Rockets, so he's going to be playing in the Memorial Cup next year for the Rockets. He's a guy who might be under the radar a bit because of the injury, you know, sort of out of sight, out of mind. But a really good player there in Dylan Hamilak.
There you have it. Guy Flaming covers the Western Hockey League as part of his broadcast duties with the Edmonton Oil Kings. You can also follow him online and be sure to tune in to the Pipeline Show, available wherever all good podcasts are available. Guy, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Fellas, it was a pleasure.
Always ours, Guy. When we come back, we look around the NHL, some news and notes to wrap up a Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Anyways, Brody and Hamonic are two names we're hearing a lot of. Because the Flames have good young defensemen they feel can take over for one of those guys, and they are also, as I mentioned when I talked about the Michael Frolik potential trade, they are trying to free up dollars to be able to sign restricted free agent Matthew Tkachuk.
That's from the latest edition of the TSN Bobcast. That's TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie.
Did Bob record that in the bathroom? Because what was going on with the sound quality there?
He was on the road in St. Louis for the Stanley Cup Final, so I assume that the production value wasn't quite up to speed as it normally is.
Was the Bob father in a well?
I was like, okay, is it just my ears? What's going on?
It was a little echoey. I mean, yeah, I'm sure he's doing it on the road. He's trying to persevere through technical difficulties. You know, let's be honest. I mean, as he wouldn't have been able to keep going if he did that, the wall that collapsed on him in the first hour, you know, had been actually
hit a trooper.
I feel like Leo Routens.
Yeah, the light that fell from the ceiling.
He had a little blood band.
And it was right in the middle of the game, right?
If that had hit him.
Well, it did hit him.
I mean, if that had really connected with him, yeah. I mean, that was a scary incident to see that light fall from the huge height at Oracle Arena. I guess that proves why they need a new arena in Oakland. The Raptors, of course, up 3-1. That happened in Game 3.
Well, good news for Leo is he's going to make some dollars when he sues Oracle.
Yeah, the lawsuit.
And Drew, I know you want to get into some trade rumors. If I can, just quickly, I want to give out a shout out to our good friend Hartsey, who's running in the Cancer Care Manitoba Challenge for Life today.
Nice.
And that's going on.
Okay, finish this. I
want to give Hart a shout out. He's walking for
did
his.
Did you donate to
for
him?
His of course I did. I donated to him, and obviously, you know, they lost, you know, their dad, Kenny, back in 2016. I was always really close to him. So just want to give a shout out to Hartsey, his family, and everybody who's participating in the Challenge for Life. And Drew, I know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Also a shout out to you for participating in the Cycle for Life.
Where's my donation, huh?
Drew, I only have so much discretionary income.
Wait, how about you, Dave? Where's your excuse?
Well, Drew, I don't want to say anything, but I'm a tit for tat kind of guy. And, you know, all those years, Ezzy and I grew Movembers. I don't remember ever once receiving a donation from Drew.
I actually think Drew did donate.
I know.
And I'm actually shocked that Drew has to put up with us on Saturdays. I'm actually surprised that he gave us anything.
I did donate to you last year.
Fine.
I forgot this year.
Yeah, last Sunday I participated in the Riverview Health Center Cycle Online.
And I was going to donate, but the link wasn't working. So.
That is such nonsense. Neither of you donated, but you know, a good job, Hartsey, walking for the Cancer Care Manitoba.
Sheldon put in $50 for me.
No, he didn't. both of you, cheap. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment, final segment, Saturday morning, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, it's final night in town. Nemer is in town. Get your tickets, rumorscomedyclub.com. Don't miss out. Quickly, a couple.
Does Nemer have a first name or a last name, or is it just Nemer?
Just Nemer.
Okay.
He's like Madonna.
Yep.
Like Ezzy. You lost your last name a while back as well. So, you know, just get your tickets. That's the important part. Rumorscomedyclub.com. Some news and notes from around the NHL. You heard from Bob McKenzie there about the Calgary Flames potentially interested in trading one of Travis Hamonic or TJ Brody, as they have a glut of defensemen. Do you expect that to happen, you know, as we approach the NHL draft in the next couple weeks there, Ezzy? And which one of the two do you think is more likely to be dealt?
Yeah, I would probably say Travis Hamonic. And you know, I realize that some people are speculating again that the Jets might be in on Travis Hamonic. But, I mean, TJ Brody, guys, was so good paired up with Marco Giordano, who might end up winning the Norris Trophy, right? I don't expect them to trade both of these guys. But when you're talking about, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, guys, he's coming off of his entry-level deal. They need to find money to pay him because he might be making, you know, maybe $8 million on his next contract, depending on how many years he signs for. So it looks likely that they're going to move one of these defensemen, but Hamonic's a good defenseman too. I mean, I realized that Calgary had a really, really disappointing first round exit getting swept by Colorado, but I mean, you start taking out, like, these are key guys. Brody and Hamonic, those are top four defensemen.
I don't care how good the guys that are going to come into your lineup are.
Sure.
But you're going to likely have to take a step back next season.
Yeah, like Yusuf Valimaki, he's a good defenseman, but can Yusuf Valimaki do what TJ Brody did? I don't think so.
I doubt it. It seems like they're willing to maybe take half a step back, at least during the regular season, to free up some salary cap space, which seems like what they need to do. Quickly, Dave, Nikita Zaitsev and Patrick Marleau of the Toronto Maple Leafs both seem to want to be traded out. Marleau's got 1 year left on his deal. Zaitsev's got multiple years left on his deal. You know, the Zaitsev contract seems, it's probably tradable, but not very easily tradable.
I think that, you know, there's no question that the Leafs are doing whatever they can to get rid of him. I mean, if they can find a team that'll take him, I'm sure they'll be happy. That's going to be a little harder. May have to pair him with something to make them a little more palatable.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, let us know what you think of the program. For producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board, for Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.